Private Mallory, on sentry duty at the main gate, saw a preacher approaching with an engine at his side. He drew the obvious conclusion.
Corporal of the guard, post number 2. Chief scout returning with the prisoner. Looks like he's found the girl, too.
Two privates and a nervous Corporal Penny surrounded the mounted engine, weapons leveled. Before Preacher could explain, Danvers burst onto the scene.
Corporal Penny, escort the prisoner to the guardhouse.
Now hold on a goddamn minute. This man is my friend. He's not a hostile.
He's an Indian, isn't he?
Eve Billings, tears of relief on her face, came up then to relieve Preacher of Anna. She stopped short, astonished at the figure who sat his horse in front of her.
Why, that's the Indian I told you about, Preacher. He's the one who watched us from a distance. Lieutenant Colonel, he's friendly right enough. He smiled and waved to me every time.
His name is Cloud Blanket. Cloud Blanket, this is Miss Billings. And this is...
Charlie Billings came forward and raised his right hand in the sign of greeting and peace.
Hey, Yuta, Cloud Blanket.
Shock registered on the face of Eve Billings.
Charles Ryan Billings, you know this Indian?
Ah, sure. He's my friend, but it's supposed to be a secret. Back in the other mountains, he came to me and taught me how to track game. That's why I always done so good.
Did so well.
He gave me these moccasins, too.
He is still a hostile prisoner, and I want him removed to a secure place at once.
And I say, hell no. Before you lock anyone up, Colonel, we'll just all ride out of here and leave you to the mercy of the real hostiles.
You can't do that. It's desertion in the face of the enemy. I'll have you shot for that.
Yeah, you may try, Colonel, but you'll have a damn hard time doing it. Antoine, 3 sleeps. Grab your gear. We're getting out of here.
After 2 tense minutes, the mountain men appeared with their horses loaded. Without another word, Preacher and Cloud Blanket in the lead, they left the fort by the open main gate. After they departed, Danvers looked around and spotted BSM Muldoon.
Sergeant Major Muldoon, take a horse and follow them. I want to know every detail of what they are up to.
Beyond the ridge that overlooked Fort Washington, Preacher halted the small party and made a fire for coffee. While it brewed, he listened to what Cloud Blanket knew of Iron Shirt.
I believe that there is more behind this than a moonstruck holy man. There are 3 white men who go wherever Iron Shirt goes. They do not have kind faces. They are the ones who bring the rifles.
I'll have to look into that. A while back, I thought I'd run into the whites that was supposed to be running with Iron Shirt.
Preacher went on to relate the run-in with Blake Sowers, including a description of the outlaw.
That is the man who brought the wagons with the rifles. He is like the rattlesnake.
Was, Cloud Blanket. I killed him.
He will not be missed. By me or any of my band.
I'm gonna have to get a look at these other whites you told me about.
You are not going back to the soldier lodges?
Hell no. Let that damn pompous Danvers sweat a bit. The others can go back in a couple of days if they want. That'll help some.
While you are gone, my braves and I will not be able to protect the foolish soldiers, but we will try.
They drank another cup of coffee, and Cloud Blanket described to Preacher how to find the war camp. And then they parted as friends. BSM Terrence Muldoon and his 3-man detail returned to Fort Washington to report. They were unaware that they had been allowed to get close enough to Preacher's camp on purpose to hear what was being discussed.
So, Mr. Preacher is going off to look for some non-existent white renegades who are supposed to be aiding the hostiles that attacked us? Do you suspect, Sergeant Major, that he intends to join them?
Certainly not, sir, and that's a fact. Preacher may be a lot of things, depending on how you see him, but he's not disloyal. Not a bit, sir.
I want a detail sent off to trail our Mr. Preacher. Lieutenant Judson will lead it. I know how you dislike garrison duty, Sergeant Major, so I am sending you along as ranking non-com.
And the purpose of our going after him, if I may ask, sir?
I want you to bring him and the others who deserted us back here.
To be punished, is it, sir?
No, to tell us what we need to know to defeat these hostiles.
You think they'll be coming back, do you, Colonel, sir?
You can count on it, Sergeant Major. As soon as they lick their wounds and get into a proper frenzy. You have your orders.
Yes, sir.
Danvers turned his attention back to a dispatch he had been writing to his superiors back east. After a fast, hard 3-day journey, Preacher and his friends, none of whom seemed eager to return to the fort, reached the war camp deep in the Bighorn Canyon region. It had been up and down mountains all the way, mostly up, as Preacher saw it. At noon of the last day, Preacher reined in and pointed to the crisp-edged imprints of iron wagon wheels.
There's no question that there's white men with that biggest Blackfoot band. They're close, too. I think we need only get close enough to take a peek, then get on back.
You reckon the Colonel will thank us for what we find out?
I doubt he knows the words, Antoine. We'll ease up on these here hostiles after dark and see what we can see.
What they saw, though they had no names for them, were Prager, Gross, and Riker. Preacher watched their activity for a while, then came to the conclusion that the Blackfoot and their allies were making preparations to return to Fort Washington. He nudged Three Sleeps in the ribs.
I think we got what we came for. We'll ease our way out of here and head back in the morning.
Except for Lieutenant Judson and BSM Muldoon, the detail that followed after Preacher consisted of men so inept that they made their presence painfully obvious. So lulled did they become that they had not the slightest awareness of being watched. Early the next morning, they blithely walked their horses directly into imminent danger. The engines took the Dragoons entirely by surprise. Three Dragoons died before one could fire a shot. The hostiles had come across the sign of white men and decided upon an ambush.
Dismount! Form a circle with your horses! Every other man, return fire when you see the rifle blast!
Mounted warriors came from a tree line along one ridge and charged toward the circle of horses. Had the Blackfoot waited only a short while longer, they could have caught all of the birds in their nest. From a distance, Preacher and the men with him heard the skirmish.
Sounds like carbines to me.
That it does. Now what, you suppose?
Figure Colonel Danvers sent some people after us.
Should we go help him out?
I don't see why not.
Yeah!
Terribly outnumbered, the 18-man patrol died by ones and twos. Blackfoot swarmed around the improvised shelter, the horses targeted indiscriminately along with the Dragoons. One beast, in pain from a neck wound, broke the grip of the soldier holding it and ran out among the charging hostiles. That opened a gap which allowed a dozen Blackfoot to dash through. With lance and tomahawk, they began to slash at the Dragoons from terribly close quarters. Lieutenant Judson went down, a lance rammed through his belly. The unfortunate Private Mallory died a second later, his body draped over that of his officer.
Oh, God have mercy on that poor stupid lad.
Suddenly, three mountain men and six Arapaho warriors charged down on the backs of the Blackfoot. Nine Blackfoot went down immediately. Preacher unlimbered one of his walking colts. Sensing the sudden shift in their medicine, the war party quickly retreated to the cover of the surrounding trees.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph, sure I'm glad to see you, Preacher. Hey, that's a fact.
How'd this happen to you?
They got us entirely by surprise. Didn't know there was any heathen about to, like, shot arrows at us from the grass. And then more of the spalpeen bastards come out of the trees, shooting better rifles than we have. It was a terrible slaughter, it was.
Yeah, I can see that.
Oh, me lads, even Mallory the Wally. And I figured he was too dumb to even know when to die.
The Colonel's not gonna like that, eh?
Colonel send you after us?
That he did. I gotta confess to you, I've not seen nor heard anything certain, but I do have some worries about the Colonel. He's been writing a lot of dispatches of late, only they aren't to General Ferris or to the War Department. I've yet to see who he sends them to, but it's certain it's not anyone in our chain of command.
But there's more, ain't it?
Truth be told, there is. It's about his attitude toward the men, Preacher. The way he sent us out here, an 18-man patrol into hostile country, with not a fare thee well. And ordering that counterattack back when the heathens had the fort surrounded. It's almost though he wants us to get killed off to the last man jack of us. Commander should lead his men, inspire them, and by God protect them too.
That awakened dark suspicions in the mind of Preacher, although he had to put them aside for the present and look into it all later. Muldoon had suffered a hard, messy blow to the head, which cut his scalp and raised a knot. Time that was taken care of.
Yeah, you know more about these things than I do, Sergeant Major. Now let me get a good look at you. I can see you took a hard messy to the head there. Scalp's torn and you got a nasty-looking goose egg.
After some gentle probing and prodding, Preacher satisfied himself the skull remained intact and pronounced his verdict.
Well, you'll recover, but with your patrol wiped out and no way to get back alone, it might be best for you to ride with us.
You're not going direct to the fort?
Nope. This ambush tells me we haven't finished our business here. We need to get a look at this iron shirt up close and personal. Find out what hold he has on these engines.
And when will that be occurring?
Tonight.
Preacher's little band made careful observations of the routine engaged in by Iron Shirt. In this case, two large bands of Northern Cheyenne, won over by the news of the near success at the fort, prepared for the ritual. Later that night, after the immersion, firewalking, feasting, drumming, and singing ended, would be ideal for what Preacher had in mind. Once they had pulled back far enough from the camp, Preacher revealed his intentions.
Antoine and me are going to go in there and stir him up some, leaving some real scary things for Iron Shirt. If we're lucky, he'll begin to doubt his own medicine.
What scary things?
Oh, just some things we gathered up earlier today.
Preacher and Antoine had hunted during part of the afternoon, using bows with all the skill of an Injun. Part of what they took, they ate. Some portions of the animal had been put away for later use. Preacher knew exactly what he wanted, and had used the last hours of daylight to paint Plains Injun pictographs on strips of rawhide. He took those and the animal parts with him when he and Antoine slipped away to the Blackfoot encampment at around 2 o'clock in the morning. A heavy overcast made the ground a pool of ink. They entered the sleeping war village silently. Preacher worked his way to the center of the camp, then located the ideal spot. With Antoine standing guard in front of the entrance to the lodge of Iron Shirt, Preacher placed a headless skunk on the ground. Next came a fresh deer heart, to which he affixed one of the pictograph strips. Those were the symbols for Iron Shirt's name. Beside that, he left the severed testicles of the same deer, with signs on the rawhide that said, "White Wolf takes these from Iron Shirt." Satisfied with his nocturnal display, Preacher signaled to Antoine, and the mountain men slipped out of camp. Looking down on the Injun camp from a distance the next morning, Preacher made a quick count of those in the war camp. He figured some 12 or more had abandoned the cause. The three white men in camp set off southeast with Cheyenne guides. Cloud Blanket had been right, and Preacher would tell him so. A big stir came when Iron Shirt learned of the defections.
They are women! They shame the name Blackfoot! I have had a vision! We will make a mighty raid on the soldiers we have fought before, with our Cheyenne and Sioux brothers. This time we will be victorious. I have strengthened the medicine that protects you. Nothing of the white man's can harm you.
Oh, hell. As if he didn't plan all along to go back to the fort. I do believe I might pay them one more visit come night.
They came in the darkest part of the night. Preacher and his companion slipped into the gathering of lodges from 10 different points of the compass. Preacher bent low and used a torch to set fire to a 6-foot-high lodge. Then he made for another one. Not far away, one of the Arapaho, Gord, overturned another and shot the occupants. 3 sleuths Norris trampled mounds of supplies and set them ablaze. Antoine Revier hurled cases of ammunition and bundles of arrows into the central fire. The enemy swirled all around them, unwilling to fire their rifles for fear of hitting a friend. In the mad gyration of the swift raid, Preacher came face to face with Iron Shirt. Preacher pulled his right-hand Walker Colt. The bogus medicine man's body flew backward and crumpled to the ground.
Where's your medicine now, you dead son of a bitch?
Preacher signaled for the others to leave. They had accomplished much more than he had expected. Firing their weapons behind them, the mountain men, Arapaho, and BSM Muldoon quickly faded into the dark. Spying on the camp the next morning, Preacher and his companions were shocked to find that the warriors had not disbanded after the death of Iron Shirt. nor did they take time to mourn the loss of their leader and elect a new one. Rather, some set out immediately, with Cheyenne Braves acting as guides, in search of those who had done the damage. The rest continued toward the fort.
Who's that Indian puff in the center of the group? Looks like the whole hundred or so Blackfoot are shielding him.
Good God, it's Iron Shirt. That bastard tricked me. Who'd have thought the son of a bitch even slept in that damn chain mail?
Obviously sore as hell from taking the point-blank shot of the Walker Colt, Iron Shirt sat his pony warily. Surrounded as he was by his warriors, the medicine man was unreachable. Preacher knew exactly where the hostiles were headed.
We gotta get back to the fort.
Mid-morning remained markedly cool 2 days later when the sentry's voice rang out from the gate.
Corporal of the Guard! Post number 2! Visitors at the gate!
Corporal Collins came over and found 3 men on horseback. They were dressed like dandies.
Good morning, gentlemen. May I inquire as to your business at Fort Washington today?
Quentin Prager took the lead.
We must see your commanding officer at once.
What about?
It's a matter of great urgency.
If you tell me what it is, I can convey the information to Colonel Danvers.
It is a matter of life and death.
Oh, that's what it is, eh? The Colonel will want to hear that, I'm sure.
Damn it, man, the country west of here is full of roving bands of hostiles. Tell him that. And tell him that Quentin Prager and 2 associates are here to see him at once.
I reckon you fellers didn't see the bullet scars on the wall. We've whipped the savages and sent them running.
No, you didn't. Because all the Indians we saw were headed this way. Tell that to your Colonel Danvers.
Yes, sir. Perhaps you should follow me, sir.
Collins, what is this?
Sir, these 3 men insisted on seeing you right away. They have news of the Indians.
Do they? Very well, Corporal. Leave them to me. You may go.
Yes, sir.
Danvers waited a moment to ensure that no prying ears lingered beyond the door. Then he turned on Prager, Gross, and Riker.
What in the name of God are you doing here?
Prager took a step forward, asserting his control.
The whole thing is coming apart. Preacher is alive.
I know that, but he's gone now. I dismissed him and he went away.
He went right to the war camp of Iron Shirt. He's worked some sort of savage mysticism that's nearly driven Iron Shirt out of his mind. It's true what I told your corporal. The Blackfoot, Cheyenne, and Sioux are on their way here. But if we don't get a war started soon, it will all blow up in our faces.
That's terribly disturbing. What do you expect me to do?
I want you to have these dragoons attack the peaceful Cheyenne at once. The ones who did not join Iron Shirt. That's sure to bring about the desired reaction and satisfy our friends back east.
Prager paused, and he looked out the window around the headquarters and at the palisades beyond.
Apparently, you did too good a job on this fort. By now, I expected to find all but you dead. The troops are in much too good shape. It looks as if they could fight their way through any number of Indians.
My dragoons had to fight their way out here. Naturally, they gained experience.
Prager closed with Danvers in 2 rapid steps. He tapped a long forefinger on the colonel's chest.
Let me remind you that they are the ones who are supposed to lose. The whole program is poised to fall into place, but it will take a massacre and an Indian war to clear the land of the savage vermin.
Checking his anger, Lieutenant Colonel Danvers turned partly away.
I am only taking orders. I am not a participant in anything beyond the military involvement, of which, I'll remind you, I took no part in the planning. I suggest you leave forthwith, before any fighting begins, if you value your hide so much.
Preacher's band arrived at Fort Washington the next day. The Blackfoot, Cheyenne, and Sioux were right behind him. Now, from the Round Top Knoll where he had made medicine, Iron Shirt observed the frantic activity within the walls through a brass telescope given him by Quentin Prager. He could not mask his surprised reaction when he recognized 3 particular faces. He lowered the glass and turned to 2 moons.
The Great Spirit smiles on us. The man Prager and his nurslings are inside the fort. We can now sweep all of our enemies away in one battle. Then all of the plains will burst out in flame.
We have them trapped, right enough. But why have they come here?
Why do the white men do many stupid things?
Iron Shirt, since they know of our plans, it cannot be for protection. It may be they came here to betray us.
Then they shall die slowly.
Quentin Prager withdrew into a dark rage when he learned of the death of Blake Sowers. He took his fury to the saloon and the sutler's store, but he stopped just short of entering when he saw above the bat wings that three buckskin-clad men who had ridden in earlier in the day were inside. They gulped down prodigious drafts of beer and wiped their lips with the backs of their hands. Prager moved to one side as Corporal Collins suddenly barreled towards him from behind, but Collins ignored him as he dashed into the saloon.
The Indians are on the move and heading this way.
Oh, hell's fire. I could have told you they were on the way if you'd asked. Boys, we best be getting to the walls. Them Indians ain't here for a bison feast.
The mountain men and Collins charged outside.
Antoine, three sweeps, we better...
Shit!
A single bullet shot past Preacher's ear.
Sacrebleu! Where's that shot come from?
From behind us!
Preacher turned to see the bat wings of the saloon entrance settling back into place.
And whoever fired it is in the saloon right now.
They're here!
Y'all go to the walls! Now! They need you!
Well, what about you?
I'll be there directly. Go on!
As Collins and the two mountain men raced for the wall, Preacher strode to the saloon door. Inside the bar, behind a table in the back, Prager sat calmly, grinning at Preacher.
Hello, Preacher.
I reckon you'd be Prager. I figure you're responsible for stirring up this engine ruckus. Can I bend your ear a moment?
I have time.
I just thought you ought to know I hate a stinking white renegade more than I hate a Pawnee. Now, are you gonna do it the easy way and give up?
That'll be the day.
Well then, do you want it in here or outside?
Prager didn't reply. Instead, he fired with his concealed pistol from under the table. The bullet whizzed past Preacher and struck wood near the bar. Responding in a manner totally unexpected by Prager, Preacher charged him and dove over the table. Preacher rammed Prager's head against the floorboards repeatedly until a small cloud of dust hung around the battered renegade. Drops of blood from Prager's split scalp formed a halo around his head. Prager's eyes glazed. Preacher rose to his feet and turned to leave. Suddenly, Prager grabbed for the butt of another of his short-barreled 60 pistols. Preacher was too quick for the consummate con artist. He shot Prager in the right shoulder. His gun hand made inoperable, Prager made a try with his left. To his surprise, he got the pistol free. The ball skimmed Preacher's left thigh, but that didn't slow Preacher in the least. Prager's chest erupted in a spray of gore. His body went limp. The noise came from behind the bar.
I'm giving you to the count of three to show yourself.
Don't shoot! It's the bartender!
The barkeep's face appeared over the top of the bar.
There's another one of them out back in the chick cell.
Much obliged.
Preacher left the saloon by the back door. He found Morton Gross at the outhouse. The chubby renegade fumbled to button his fly as he exited the small building.
I killed Prager not a minute ago. I gather you're the one called Gross. It suits you.
I don't know what you mean. My name is Pernbrook.
I don't care what you call yourself. You rode in with a piece of renegade white trash named Prager who's been stirring up the Blackfoot, Cheyenne, and Sioux. I'm here to take you to justice in front of Colonel Danvers or to bury you. The choice is yours.
In the next 10 seconds, Morton Gross made the biggest mistake of his life. Instead of surrendering, he grabbed for his pistol.
You must be Preacher, right?
That's what they call me.
I know. I'm going to die. I just want to do something on the plus side of the ledger before I do.
Go on. I'm listening.
Watch out for your Colonel Danvers, Preacher. He's in on this thing of Prager's.
You sure of that?
Yes.
Where's Riker?
He's...
is right here. The voice came from behind Preacher. He tensed and made ready to spring to one side. He fully expected to get a bullet in the back at any second. Instead, Riker started toward him.
I saw Quaiden's body. Now I see you've disposed of Morton as well. Saves me the trouble, I suppose. I should be grateful and let you go. Our Indian friends will finish you readily enough. But then, coward that he was, Gross told you more than you should know. You've more lives than an alley cat, Preacher. And you might get away from the Blackfoot. So you see, I don't have any choice.
Braced for evasion, Preacher used Flex's knees to power his next move. Yeah. Preacher jumped straight into the air and spun, bringing a Walker Colt ahead of him. Locking the precise position of Riker, his first shot missed. Lithe as a cat, Preacher came down on the balls of his feet just as Riker fired. Riker's ball caught Preacher by surprise and burned like hell's fire along the left side of the rib cage. It threw Preacher's second shot off, so that it only cut a chunk of Riker's right hip bone. Riker stumbled to his left to the protection of the outhouse. Cautiously peered around one corner. Surprise puckered his lips when he saw no sign of Preacher.
Where could he have gotten to so quickly?
Riker searched the entire area behind the sutlers with his eyes. Confident that Preacher had left, there being no hiding place, he came from behind the small structure and started back toward the saloon. The door to the outhouse opened.
Behind you, Riker.
Damn.
Riker made a valorous try and spun from left to right so his pistol would come in line first. Preacher let him complete his turn. Riker sank to his knees, blood pouring from the wound in his chest. His pistol discharged, the ball punching through the door of the toilet. Feebly, he reached for another pistol. Preacher's next ball put a black hole at the top of the bridge of Riker's nose. Preacher stepped into the clear.
Now all I got left is iron shirt and a whole goddamn army engines.
With the wall almost breached, Preacher busied himself in an effort to get two privates to pull the 3-pound cannon to the top of the dirt platform. Lieutenant Colonel Danvers confronted him there.
Do you mind telling me where Mr. Prager and his associates happen to be?
Dead. And before one of them died, he told me you're mixed up in this dirty little business.
Danvers' eyes went wild. Froth formed at the corners of his mouth, and heedless of his surroundings, he drew his dragoon pistol.
That's a damn lie. Soldiers, I'm arresting this man as an Indian sympathizer. Disarm him and lock him up in the guardhouse.
Moving swiftly, Preacher knocked both privates aside and pulled his Walker Colt. Danvers' shot hit Preacher hard in the left shoulder, which caused him to drop his Colt. Danvers took aim again. In the next instant, a Cheyenne lance shot through the air. It split the heart of Lieutenant Colonel Danvers. The lance had been hurled by Cloud Blanket, who dropped from the roof of the headquarters building to land beside Preacher. They embraced in the Cheyenne manner.
Now all we gotta do is kill Iron Shirt and this first cousin to a skunk alliance will fall apart.
Yes, I always knew it would come to that. Though I will not be the one to spill his blood. Here, that shoulder needs caring for.
While Cloud Blanket bound Preacher's shoulder and packed the wound with a poultice, he offered advice on the best means of finishing off Iron Shirt. Preacher listened intently. Meanwhile, the cannon was moved into place. The assault on the weakened portion of the wall ended quickly, but little respite came for the defenders. No sooner had the Blackfoot withdrawn from the west stockade than the Cheyenne and Sioux flung themselves at the north face. The Cheyenne used a new tactic, throwing ropes attached to grappling hooks over the wall. Once the hooks were secure, they tied the other ends to their horses. In a matter of seconds, they were able to pull down the entire north wall of the stockade. The Sioux warriors swarmed into the newly created breach in the defenses. With the fortifications about to fall, the desperate young dragoon gunners manned the cannon, firing at a flat trajectory now. When they ran out of prepared grape shot, they dumped loose balls down the barrel and double wadded it. Preacher reappeared on the parade ground with his French Lamas sporting rifle. Aching from wounds in both shoulders, he fought his way through a group of Sioux who had breached the wall and now swarmed onto the parade ground. BSM Muldoon saw him coming and helped clear a path with some well-aimed shots. Eyes straining against the haze of smoke and dust, Preacher at last located the Blackfoot Prophet. This was going to hurt him almost as much as it would Iron Shirt. Preacher knelt and put the butt plate of the rifle to his shoulder. Iron Shirt was making medicine on the little round top knoll. His body twisted and jerked in the gyrations of his ritual dance around the blazing fire. Taking careful aim, Preacher touched the set trigger and put a fingertip on the release tag. Two long seconds passed, then Iron Shirt looked up sharply as the ball whizzed over his head. Moving like an aged weakling, Preacher reloaded. Again he took aim.
Ow! God damn it!
Iron Shirt staggered, sagged, toppled. He hit the ground and lay there. His limbs twitched in agonized reflex. And then he lay still. It had worked as he'd expected. Although much smaller, the .36 caliber ball had markedly more velocity and better sectional density than a .54 round, so that it cut through the links of chainmail and pierced the heart of Iron Shirt. Word of the Messiah's death traveled fast. The Allies fell silent on the battlefield. Cloud Blanket appeared at Preacher's right. He raised his bloodied lance to command attention.
My brothers, your false prophet Iron Shirt is dead. His medicine was not good against the long gun of White Ghost, who took his life. Stop the fighting and go home. Live there in peace with the white men, who will leave this place in the moon of painted leaves. There will be no fort in this place.
Slowly, his message sank in. Their heads bowed in perceived defeat. The warriors turned away from Fort Washington and began to leave the area in small groups. Within an hour, they had all passed from sight. After the warriors had left the field and order had been restored, Eve and her children came with some of the others to where Preacher sat under a single oak that had been spared by the builders, deadening the ache of his wounds with a jug of good rye.
Preacher, we were wondering what you had in mind for the next few months.
Well, I'm going to write a report on what happened here to go with Captain Draylen. You know, the one who's going to lead those soldier boys back come September. Antoine and Three Sleeps are going to scout for him.
Yes, but what about you?
Me? I'm going to take myself off somewhere quiet where I won't see no engines or pilgrims or soldier boys for a long, long time. And just plain heal up.
Eve's expression revealed that a door just slammed shut on what she wanted so desperately to believe. But she pulled herself together quickly.
Actually, I wanted to ask you about a more immediate future. I would be pleased if you would take supper with my children and myself.
Well, now, I think that could be managed. I'm tired of all this backslapping that's gone over me shooting Iron Shirt anyway. A little quiet supper sounds fine.
After the meal, with Charlie and Anna asleep for the night, Preacher and Eve talked earnestly, quietly for a while. Then they took a stroll to the small cabin set aside for Preacher. Early the next morning, Preacher emerged from the low log structure. He yawned and stretched as much as his wounds would allow, then glanced back through the open door as he made his way to the nearest cook fire and a pot of coffee. He had a big, goofy grin plastered on his face as he made an announcement to an unseen person within.
Well, I'll allow as how I just might find that quiet place I want to rest up in somewhere in the Northwest Territory.
The First Mountain Man 7, Blackfoot Messiah, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1996, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Colleen Delaney, Thomas Penny, Tim Carlin, Peter Stray, Elizabeth Demery, James Lewis, Christopher Graybill, Dylan Lynch, Kate Torrey, James Konacek, Andy Clements, and Jeff Baker. Additional Boot Hill Boys by the Dead Giveaways. Directed by Bob Soutan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler and Brian Patton. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. Musical score composed and performed by Johann Detweiler. Additional original music by Brian Patton. If you enjoy Blackfoot Messiah, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Blood Bond and Eagle series, available from Graphic Audio and Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for exciting previews of other Graphic Audio titles. We appreciate it.
Snake Creek is a shabby little Texas town ruled by a mean-tempered outlaw who fancies himself a king. King Petty.
That your wife?
What's it to you?
Good-looking woman.
I don't think I like this talk. You just keep on riding.
You telling me what to do? If I were you, I'd think twice before trying to boss King Petty.
I've heard about you around town. Never thought to see you out here. Would you kindly move on? I've got work to do.
There. Did it again, trying to tell me what to do. Now you've made me mad.
Now, listen, Petty, I have no argument with you. I meant no harm.
By damn, now you're whining. Now you really made me mad.
Oh! What'd you do that for?
I felt like it. I can do anything I want. What's your name?
Jack Brandom.
Good. I sometimes like to know the name of a man I'm killing.
But Sam Two Wolves just can't stand by and watch. And before long, he and Matt find themselves in the fight of their lives.
So, Two Wolves, you think you're good? This time you lost. Goodbye to an overrated wise ass.
It's a fight they never meant to start, but they sure as hell are gonna finish it.
I thought I told you to stay out of trouble.
So you did. Only when did I ever listen to your advice?
Good point. But you should.
Then think how boring your life would be.
Blood Bond number 9, Death in Snake Creek. Available now on Graphic Audio.
My name is Ambika. I was born to conquer, Cain. I've declared a special war against those who wear the black armor of magistrates and who seek to do Baron Cobalt's bidding.
Friend Cain, you yet maintain an open mind about Ambika.
You mean, do I still think it's possible we could use her for our own purposes?
If you prefer to be so coarse, yes. Though I view the opportunity as mutually beneficial. She will, I trust, use us as much as we are able to use her.
Yeah. I want to see what she's all about.
The Cerberus warriors have met the potential perfect ally, Ambika, the most ambitious woman any of them has ever known, with an army that would easily help them defeat the Barons. Cain's interest quickly turns to more than making a strong ally in the fight against Cobalt's baronial stronghold.
I can see your passion burning within you. I arouse you. You can tell me that's not true, but we'll both know you're lying. You may not have denied your passions in the past, but I have. Almost my whole life, until now. Take me, Cain. We would be good together, Cain. It would be so good.
But has Cain's lust led him and his companions into their most dangerous challenge yet?
She's got a pre-dark sub full of biological warfare agents that she means to hit Cobaltville with to take everybody out. Shit. That's gonna be more trouble than even Lakesh is counting on.
and I don't think this bitch has experienced a minute in her life when she didn't think what she was doing was exactly right.
Well, maybe we'll find out how good we really are.
Now you'll die, Kane!
Don't miss Outlanders number 12, Wreath of Fire.
Shit, I'm through being peaceable.
Well, fuck this.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.